Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests that are designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the full-service law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia, and serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about OF&P, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com. And if you'd like to make an appointment with one of our 54 attorneys, call us at 703-218-2100. I invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, which has on it all of these shows as well as prior shows. Over the last 4.5 years, I've been recording this radio show, and there's a lot of content there for you to listen to. There's also a lot of video and written articles of interest to you in the estate, tax, and business planning areas. So check out blueprintforwealth.org, and if you subscribe, you'll receive notifications of all recent blog posts. Finally, I invite you to read my article in the Washington Business Journal every month called Blueprint for Wealth, where I focus on tax, estate planning, and business planning topics of interest. Today, we're going to be focusing on the top 10 financial planning rules that everyone who owns stock options needs to know. Managing your stock options is one of the more complex financial challenges you'll ever face. In an initial effort to get the most out of your company's stock plan, let's focus on the following 10 rules. Rule number one is set your goals. When the company granted stock options to you, or restricted stock, whatever the case may be, your company gave you what it hopes is a powerful motivation and retention tool. It wants you to understand the option's value, and it wants you to fit the stock into your overall financial plans. All financial planning starts with setting goals. What do you want to do with the proceeds from the eventual sale of the stock? Do you want to pay for kitchen renovations in the next 2 years? How about your child's college education in the next 4 years? Or another child's wedding in the next 10 to 12 years? Or even retirement in the next 15 to 30 years? Reflecting on these goals will help you focus on your specific use of the stock options and stock in relation to your other income and savings. Rule number two, develop an overall plan. Determine how you're going to handle the stock options over time. You need to be aware of your choices, how long the options will last, what their term is, and the tax and lost consequences if you exercise the options at any given point in time. Now, in setting your goals and in developing an overall plan, you need to exercise and sell at least enough stock to meet your goals. In addition, you may want to stagger the exercises and subsequent sales over a period of years to spread out the tax consequences. Alternatively, some studies have shown that holding on to options for the full term may be the best way to maximize your gain. If you simply decide at the beginning or at the end of each year whether or not to exercise and sell during the year, you could generate unnecessary taxes or lose opportunities when the option price keeps rising. Plus, if you don't keep track of the expiration dates of your options, your in-the-money options, the options that have a value in excess of your exercise price, may expire unexercised. Rule number three, value your stock options accurately. Tax intricacies often will catch you by surprise. You may forget to discount the value of the stock option by the fact that you owe an exercise price or by the taxes generated on the exercise. An option to buy at $50 a share, 1,000 shares of your company's stock that may be trading currently at $100 might first appear to be the equivalent of a $100,000 investment, or 1,000 shares times $100 current price. But in the end, you may net only about $30,000, first after paying a $50 exercise price, and second, after paying 40% or more in federal and state taxes on the exercise of the option. With the commonly granted non-qualified stock options, your company probably will have to withhold at least 25% of federal taxes plus payroll and state taxes when you exercise your options. Rule number four is wait as long as possible before you exercise those options. If the outlook for your company is good, don't immediately exercise the options. A traditional stock option will give you the right to buy stock up to 10 years into the future. Historically, stocks increase in value over time. By waiting, you can enjoy all the upside leverage potential without any cash investment. And the spread between your exercise price and the rising stock price grows without taxation, at least until you exercise it. Rule number five, when you should ignore rule number four, that is, waiting as long as possible to exercise. You should wait to exercise only if doing so meets your goals and your needs. If the stock options represent more than, say, 25% of your overall net worth, diversification may be more important than waiting. In addition, your company may have stock ownership guidelines or may just want to see you put more of your own money at real risk in company stock. That may require you to exercise and hold on to the shares. Finally, if your company's stock is volatile, meaning that the stock price is going up and down in a very short period of time, fairly rapidly and fairly significantly, making the price swings personally hard to tolerate, you may want to exercise and sell earlier rather than hold and exercise later. Of course, you can't sell company stock when you know important inside information. So all of these rules are subject to the insider trading rules, which say if you know something that the public doesn't know, then you cannot trade the stock with that knowledge. Check into whether your company has a blackout period or pre-clearance trading rules that impact the timing of any of your stock sales. Rule number six, learn what happens when you leave your company and tell your family members. Read the stock option plan that you were given when you received the option in the first place and your grant agreement. Read them carefully. Know your rights if you're fired or if you quit, or if you go to work for a competitor, or you retire, or what happens if you become disabled or even die. Many plans give you 90 to 180 days to exercise vested options after retirement or disability. The period could be shorter or longer. In addition, you may lose vested stock option gains immediately if you go to work for a direct competitor. Make sure you, as well as your family or close friends, are aware of these rights, and clearly your estate planning lawyer should be aware of this as well. It's really a shame when valuable stock options lapse without ever being exercised. Rule number seven, if you have an incentive stock option, which is a statutory stock option, you'd better be aware of the alternative minimum tax. So, before you decide to exercise and hold on to stock, double check whether you have incentive stock options, ISOs, or non-qualified options. With a non-qualified option, when you exercise, you will owe tax at your ordinary income rate on the spread between the option exercise price and the market price, whether or not you sell the stock immediately. But with an ISO, when you intend to hold onto the stock for at least 1 year so you can qualify for long-term capital gains treatment, you may face the AMT tax trap. The biggest mistake you can make with an ISO is to forget or not know about the alternative minimum tax. The AMT rules require you to take the spread between the fair market value and the exercise price on the date you exercise it in calculating your alternative minimum taxable income, unless you sell the shares in the calendar year that you exercise the options. This messy AMT calculation adds back to your income a bunch of standard deductions and other items and subjects the gain at tax rates of up to 28%. If the tax on this amount is higher than the standard regular tax, you have to pay the higher amount, so you'd better be aware of the alternative minimum tax. Rule number 8, determine your tax rates and watch your tax brackets. Most stock options generate ordinary taxable income when they're exercised, either because they're non-qualified stock options, or you exercise an ISO and sell it soon after you exercise it, not satisfying the long-term capital gains holding period. Determine your tax rate so you can plan for any estimated tax payments and analyze whether you want to take all income in 1 year or spread it out over several years. For example, under the current tax rates, near the end of the year, your taxable income might be, say, $121,000. And let's say you have potential stock option gains of another $100,000. You're currently in the 28% tax bracket, but by exercising that stock option, it may put you into a higher tax bracket, the 33% or even the 35% bracket. Rule number 9, focus on your vesting rules and dividends. Some companies now grant options that are immediately exercisable, but have resale restrictions that lapse over time. Or if your company pays a stock dividend, you may be better off exercising now and holding the stock to get the dividend. Rule number 10, choose an advisor who understands stock options. Make sure that they work with them frequently and give you references to clients who they help with their stock option issues. If you've got questions on your stock options, call us at 703-218-2100. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth.